This is Peter.
And this is Tom.
And you're listening to History Teachers Talking Podcast. All right, this is Peter Zablocki and Thomas Fresca, and welcome back to our podcast. Tom, I feel like this one is, like if we didn't do this one, I feel like I'd be doing an injustice to our friendship for your sake.
Well, I don't know about that, but it was one that we kind of, I mean, I came up with it off the cuff.
Yeah.
Well, basically my son was playing with some old action figures and said, who's this guy? And the figure was of Andre the Giant. So I decided, you know, that would be a pretty interesting podcast because there's a lot of interesting folklore out there about him. And, you know, he's one of these individuals that people maybe might recognize a name or you might not even know. You may not recognize his name, but you might recognize his likeness that you see all over the place, those Obey stickers and things like that. That's based on him, and people have heard of him. And if you Google him until that, you're going to find all sorts of information. And he lived a really interesting life, although a very fast, quick life also. Yeah. And I know you had a connection with it too. I guess we'll get to sometimes in the podcast. You have a little bit of a
connection. I mean, I guess we're good. It is interesting. Yeah, but one of the teachers at my high school actually dated him, like lived with him. Like she was like his wife to be or fiance or something. When he died, she was like really, really sad. So that's kind of how I knew of Andre the Giant. But obviously everyone knows about Andre the Giant. So I guess it's not a conventional episode per se.
I mean, I was thinking of it this way because my wife was like, really, you're doing Andre the Giant? Like, and I'm like, well, no, we talked about like some other historical figures. Although he's not like a historical figure. He almost is a historical figure. Like the
folklore, I guess, right?
And stuff pop about culture. It, as years go on. Like he's a modern day one, more or less. It's like when we talk about Davy Crockett and all the crazy things, you know, that supposedly Davy Crockett could do in an episode back. Now we're talking about Andre the Giant. Andre True. René Roussimoff, otherwise known as Andre the Giant.
I was going to say Roussimoff. And you are a very intense wrestling fan.
Yes, that is. Because people who know me. I it's not as much as I was when I was a kid or when I was even like a teenager. But actually, yes, it probably is.
I was never into it per se. Again, communist Poland. Come on. But you know what's interesting is that even in communist Poland in the 1980s, where color TV was something that, you know, one family member had, you know, like in your entire town, we knew who Andre the Giant was and we knew who Hulk Hogan was. You know, this is.
Yeah, they like kind of transcended a lot.
They transcended all that. Yeah. And no Iron Curtain there.
My grandparents who came from Poland, we used to watch, it was always used to be on TV, wrestling when we go to their house. And that's one way that my grandfather learned English was watching professional wrestling. He would just watch it. And that's how he would learn English.
That's kind of funny.
So it kind of just, I'd watch it with him and actually he would like learn English, you know, by watching it. So.
So I guess let's talk about one of your. By the way,
talk a little about
I mean, you the first ever wrestling event I went to was with you, and this was probably like 15 years ago.
Oh yeah, when the little kid was giving the middle finger to John Cena.
Yeah, we turned around and we're like, "F you, John Cena!" And like we're I turned like, around, like, oh, and it was like this like 3-year-old, yeah, and his father's holding him proudly, and I was like, "Oh man,
it's a little bit crazy, a little bit crazy."
Oh man. All right, so Andre Roussimoff, how would you say his name?
Roussimoff,
right?
Yeah.
So he was French.
So, born in France, yes, May 1946, May 19th, 1946. And we'll just get out of the way now. He had a giganticism, right? Excess, because of an excess of growth hormone.
But giganticism, I thought, was like when he was little, he had that. Eventually, he winds up having how do you pronounce this? I can't say it.
Yeah. Acromegaly, which is basically, it makes everything bigger, like your forehead, the jaw, the nose. It really, the deepened voice, right? The problems with his vision he had later on, the joint pain he has later on, everything just keeps on growing. And basically, he was told this in the mid 70s when he went on for a tour of Japan. The Japanese doctor said, listen, this is what you have. We can remove this gland that will stop it. And he said, no. He said, just leave it. And he knew it was going to shorten his life anyway. He left it in and, but he was huge. Obviously in his early life, he was at birth, he weighed 13 pounds. And he displayed a lot of the symptoms of giganticism very early on. He was always a good head taller than the other kids, abnormally large hands. By the time he was 12, he stood 6'3".
Wow.
Which is huge. Which is just massive. And they said what he would do is he would work. He worked, his family had a farm. He would work on his farm. He had three brothers and stuff like that, sisters. And they said, you know, he could do the work of like three other men because he was just so big and strong too. That's another thing with the giganticism. It's not only that you're so much bigger, but your body's producing so much more testosterone and everything else. He was a powerhouse, especially when he was like a younger kid, just like muscles and rip. And just like, he was just amazing as far as his like feats of strength. This is at like 13, 14, 15 years old.
Yep. And in France, actually, at the age of 18, even during peacetime, one was drafted, had to do a required 1 year in the French military. And when he turned 18, he was drafted like every other kid. And when he arrived at the base, they said he was too large to fit into any required uniform. But then, like, besides that, they couldn't even make him a custom one. There was not a single bunk that could actually hold him. And it was impossible. This is what really kind of said. He only lasted a couple of days. And they're like, okay, you can't do this. It was impossible for him to fit inside any trench any ground combat whatsoever, like to take part in any ground combat at the time. So they basically told him, all right, go home. Like, you don't have to stay. That's how big he was as an 18-year-old.
Yeah, he was massive. And just to get back to his younger thing, this is something that people know, but the famous playwright, novelist Samuel Beckett, I'm sure you saw this in your research. They actually made a little movie about it too. Actually took up residence right in France, commissioned local laborers to build his cottage where he was going to like write plays and stuff in the 1950s. And it was just a few hundred yards away from where the Roussimoss lived. And he used to actually drive Andre the Giant to school every day.
In his pickup truck.
And a lot of the other local kids, kids too. But he actually had some, there's debate about how much we had actually struck up a kind of a friendship with Andre the Giant. He wasn't Andre the Giant yet, but talking about telling him stories and stuff like that. And they would actually talk to each other, and they made a bunch of, couple movies about it too, like made for TV movies, like My Dinner with Andre the Giant, Sam and Didi. That's what Andre the Giant was called by his, family, was Didi.
So let's kind of get into it. And I feel like you're going to definitely probably take the lead on this one, but let's talk about like his rise to fame. Let's talk about like what he's actually known for. And I think we'll return after that to some of like the more, I would say, fun facts, but interesting facts.
Interesting facts and stories, like the folklore, the stuff.
Like what makes him so entrenched in popular culture. You know, and again, this is a History Teachers Talking podcast, but we talk about pop culture in class all the time. So, all right, let's get into Andre the Giant. You know, like how does he become a wrestler? How does this start? Why is he known?
He quit school. He was pretty good in school from what I read, right? I'm sure you saw that too.
I saw that too, yep.
But he basically decided, I'm going to be a laborer, so there's no point.
Yeah, he said, I'm going to be a farmer. I don't need school.
I don't need school. So he was like, I don't need to do that. And he worked on, hay balers and stuff like that. And again, he was just so physically powerful. But then he didn't really like that either. And then at the age of 18, he moves to Paris, and he was taught by a local wrestling promoter who basically said, this guy's huge. So I can, if I can teach this kid how to wrestle, it'd be very helpful on wrestling, and I'm not going to get too much into wrestling. It's not a wrestling podcast. But just for the different fans, yes, wrestling is fake, right? It's predetermined. But in the 1970s, it was known, but it was still very, very kept under wraps. And if you went to a professional wrestler and said, this is fake, they would break your nose. They would hurt. They would hospitalize you and say, how fake is that? Which was something that happened until like the mid-80s, early 90s still. And so Andre, to get taught was a big deal. They're teaching this 18-year-old. What to do, and he was built as basically this as Jean Ferret, which is basically this mythical French giant that lives in the woods.
Did he have a mask on? Because I read somewhere that his parents would actually watch him on TV, not knowing that it was him.
When he wrestled in Japan, he wrestled as the Great Destroyer, and he would wear a mask.
Because I read that time. Like he's grown so much since he left his household at the age of like 15.
Yeah, they
didn't
recognize
him. His parents actually saw him on TV. They had no idea what watching his son, their own son, rather.
Yeah, he was called Monster Roussimoff there, or sometimes
in
the Great 70s, Destroyer.
Right? Yeah,
yeah, early 70s, and that's what they used to do with him early on. Is that because he was so large and he was still growing? Is that he was used again? Wrestling wasn't on TV. It was on TV, but not like there wasn't cable TV and stuff. It was very different. So he would come into your town. It would be billed as like this monster Romanov, things like that would come into the area, and and be a big deal when you would see this guy walk around. Again, yeah. at this time, he's about 7'4", which is huge yeah. when you really think about it. And he's in the 400-pound range. He becomes even larger later on.
Yeah, eventually he's like in the 500s, right?
The 500-pound range, yeah. And what he does is he meets Vince McMahon Sr., not the Vince McMahon if you follow wrestling now, but the Vince McMahon Sr. of the WWWF. And he suggested a whole bunch of different changes. One, he decides, right, we're going to call him because Andre the Giant was actually really athletic. He could do like flips and stuff like that, drop kicks. He said, no, stop doing all those things, okay? We're yeah. just going to bill you as Andre the Giant. And you're going to do this really intense schedule that you're going to wrestle all around the world, but you're only going to be there for like a few weeks, a few months at the most, to keep him kind of from being overexposed in any one area. And he was always guaranteed a large amount of money for doing this. And that's really what started making him become famous, is he would be in a town or a territory for a couple months, and you have to go see this Andre the Giant guy while you're there. And then he would just vanish. He would work a couple of feuds, and he would be gone, and you'd go to another territory. And so it was always something new, always somewhere new. That's basically what was going on.
I think at one point, though, wasn't he the highest paid wrestler?
He was the highest paid wrestler at that point of all time. I think he was making over $400,000 or $700,000 a year, which in yeah. the 1970s was a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes into some of the other things I guess we could talk about now, is that whenever he went out, they said he was very generous.
He always paid.
He always paid. He refused to let anyone else pay. One reason was because he had money. He had no problem spending it. But another reason was because he consumed a huge amount of food and alcohol, which we'll get to. He's like, yeah. I don't want anyone else paying for me. And he was actually pretty good friends with, I'm sure you saw this story, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yep.
And so one time Schwarzenegger actually is able to somehow get the waiter and pay for the bill ahead of time. And Andre was like, no, and if I go out, I pay. And Schwarzenegger's like, no, he's like, I'm Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know, this is after he made like the Conan movie. I can, because how do they know each other? Because Andre the Giant actually played, if you watch the first Conan movie, the Destroyer one, that like weird monster with the horn.
Yep.
He fights. That was Andre the Giant.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was
I didn't Andre know that. Giant. I know that because I was doing research for this, but I did not know that.
Yeah.
That I mean, you see pictures of him and Arnold like on a set of Conan, and Arnold looks like a little child next to him.
And that's how he treated Arnold Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger was like, I'm paying. I already paid. And Andre the Giant's like, no, I pay. He's like, but no, listen, I'm Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's like, no, let me understand. He's like, I pay. And he picked him up. He said he picked me up like a child, Schwarzenegger. Yeah. He still tells the story. He picked me up like a child, and he put him on like a dresser, like this like bookshelf that was in the restaurant, and just left him there. And just left him there and said, I pay. And you're just like, and he's like, I don't know what to do. Like, he's like, this guy picked me up. He's like, I'm not a small man. And he picked me up like nothing and just placed me up on top of this dresser and walked away. And he just said, I pay. I was like, what are you going to do to that? So anyway, that's another one of those stories.
So after Japan, right, he gets to the U.S. Like you said, he does like this whole world thing. What would you say? At what point do you think he becomes like WrestleMania 3? Like, or is
that's way before that. Again, this is me kind of
not a wrestling podcast, but you know, for people like me that are ignorant,
but he's already huge. He's widely popular at this point. Okay,
he has a back. I know he's got a back injury in the mid 80s that actually has to wear a belt for from that point forward.
Yeah, he wears a brace.
Slows down.
You'll see. Whenever you see him wearing the uniform, the I guess outfit that a lot of people are used to seeing him wear.
Yeah, like that one piece thing?
Which was a one piece with a black singlet. The reason he started wearing that was because he wears a back brace underneath because his back was so messed up. Yeah. He also broke his ankle a little before that. And when a 7 foot, 500 pound person breaks their ankle, it's a major injury. So it took him a long time to recover. And you ever see pictures of the injury, it's gruesome. Especially this is in the 1970s and early 80s. And you have to understand too, he's doing a lot of travel, but the guy's 7'4", 500 pounds. He fits in nothing. And I think
talking about travel, did you like, I'm sure you probably, you know, looked into that, but like eventually he started obviously with the money, he would get business class, but even business class, he always had to get multiple seats.
He couldn't fit. And this, remember, he's going back and forth to Japan.
Yeah.
Like a lot of these times, these massive flights, and they said he's too big. What they would have to do when he had to relieve himself, they would call the flight attendant.
Did you read this one?
Yeah. He would go into the bathroom in a bucket. They put a curtain around him. He would go into the bathroom in a bucket, and then they would, you know, dump it out. Or that was in the hotel.
They said it's something because the toilets, no toilet could support him. Was in hotels, sometimes he had to literally like sit on a tub as if that was his toilet to go to the bathroom.
And then there was one, I remember Hulk Hogan was telling the story on the documentary. It was him and Hulk Hogan. We'll talk about them, I guess, their big match. But they were very good friends. Andre the Giant was Hulk Hogan's best man at his wedding.
Yeah.
So they were very close. But he told this story of how the tub was even too small. He couldn't even get into like the bathroom. So all he did was he laid a bunch of newspaper out on the bed and just went to the bathroom on the bed.
Nuts.
And then he like called Hulk Hogan in to come and look what he did. He's like, hey, look at this, brother, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, it's funny, but it's also very sad because like this is what he had to do because it was just he was just too big. Imagine everything being too small for you. And to give people at home an idea, they would show this, is that his pinky ring, you could take a silver dollar and slide it through.
Yep.
So that gives you the idea of how large his hand. When he would drink beer, he would drink like a six pack almost at one. He could physically palm a six pack. That just gives you
I mean, there's like stories.
Yeah, that, and
like,
we'll get into that. We get into those.
Yeah, like he consumed like over 7,000 calories worth of alcohol every day.
And he wasn't drunk.
Yeah, it didn't affect him.
Well, you said that one. Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Yeah, okay, we'll get to that. All right. So,
yes, okay.
Yeah, we'll get to the fun facts.
Yeah, sure.
All right. So he becomes known, right?
He's well known here. WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 2. He's a good guy, okay? He is what's called in the wrestling business a face. He's a good guy. Everyone loves him. They love Andre the Giant. But he is winding down his career. He's getting a lot harder for him to. He does get back surgery to prolong his career a little bit because Vince McMahon Jr., the Vince McMahon that people know if they follow wrestling now, buys this company from his father basically, and he says, "All right, I have this great plan for WrestleMania. They have the first two, Madison Square Garden, the other one's in three different places. Doesn't matter, but he wants to sell out the Pontiac Silverdome, right? Mm-hmm. In Detroit, Michigan. And it sets the indoor attendance record at that time. It stands for a number of years, over 93,000. And the main event is Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. And Andre the Giant, up to this point in the WWE, he was billed as undefeated, right? You can never beat Andre the Giant. Hulk Hogan was also this unbeatable. He was champion for like 3 years in a row, which doesn't happen anymore now, right? So they were always best friends. They always teamed up a lot of times. Okay. Now, again, if you were a wrestling fan in the 70s, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant did fight before. They actually fought at Shea Stadium. My dad tells me my dad was there. Right? He actually saw it. It was like it wasn't even the main event. It was like an undercard. Right, if that wasn't the main event, but it was just one of those things, it was cool, right? But most wrestling fans didn't know that, so they had this big match, right? Who's going to win? Andre the Giant's never lost, but here's Hulk Hogan, right? So and the whole time they're kind of wondering, you know, one, is Andre going to be able to do the match, and two, the big reason why Andre the Giant, even though he did lose matches occasionally, was because if he didn't want to lose a match, how were you going to beat him? There was no way you were going to pin him to the mat. Because a lot of times in these wrestling matches, like overseas and stuff, these old time wrestlers tell these stories. They were supposed to win a match. The other guy didn't want him to. It would become a shoot. They actually would have to fight and wrestle and beat the other guy. You had to know what you were doing. But that wasn't going to happen with Andre the Giant. It just wasn't going to happen. So they never really knew until that day what was going to happen. Even when the match started, there's a lot of these rumors where they were like, you know, they don't know if Andre's going to do the honors. That's what they would call it. So Hogan was like, I hope he does, because if he doesn't want to, it's not going to work, right? So they have the match, and if you watch the match, it's not the greatest wrestling match in the world, but it was huge. It was huge. I've watched it with my kids several times. Every once in a while, it's not a very long match either. They just like to watch it. But in it, you can see certain times, and they show it in some of the documentaries, like Hogan, Andre the Giant has Hogan in like a bear hug, and usually Andre the Giant would pick you up and like move you around. He could barely walk at this point. He was in so much pain. Wow. So Hogan's on his tippy toes, right? Kind of like trying to take the pressure off and stuff like that. But in the middle of the match, or towards the end of the match, Andre tells Hogan, body slam me. And Hogan did body slam him before, but this was years earlier and he wasn't as heavy. At this point, Andre the Giant was over 500 pounds. And he's like, wow. Okay. Hogan's like, listen, he tells me to body slam him. I'm going to body slam him. He's like, fine. So he picks him up and body slams him. It wasn't the first time Andre the Giant was ever body slammed, but at that weight, it's still like over 500 pounds.
Yeah.
Hogan actually says, you'll see him kind of like reach back after he body slams Andre the Giant. It's dead weight. Andre the Giant can't help him, you know, pick himself up.
Yeah.
He pulls the lat muscles in his back.
That's nuts.
He actually, in some interviews, he'll show you like he'll like, you know, pull up his shirt and show you. You can see like the indentations in his back still from like when he just pulled everything. It just shredded his back. That's how heavy Andre the Giant was when he slammed him.
The fact, like if you see like the video, I mean, you could YouTube this.
He slams him. Like he picks him up.
And it's nuts. Yeah, that's pretty nuts.
So, I don't know. I just always thought that was kind of a cool thing. Cool. Anyway, so he body slams Andre Giant. 1, 2, 3. He wins the match. From there, he still goes on and wrestles.
I thought it was Japan, right? Didn't he finish? He finishes up his career in Japan, right?
Well, he stays for quite some time in the WWE. He wants to become a good guy again later on. He actually becomes tag team champion with this other wrestler named Haku. We're not going to go into him, but if you want to look at some crazy wrestling stories, Andre Giant basically said the only man he ever feared was Haku. This guy was a maniac. Like some guy called wrestling fake, and he said, "Oh, this is fake." He pulled, he grabbed the guy by the jaw and just snapped the guy's jaw, like underneath, like into his mouth, and just snapped it. Yeah, he's a guy called wrestling. He's, you know, he's a lunatic. Anyway, I don't want to get into the Haku. Future podcast.
As everyone can tell, Tom really likes this stuff. I'm like unleashing Tom over here. He's like, oh, we're not talking about wrestling, but no, that's good. We need context here.
All those wrestling podcasts are going to be getting mad at me. But I'm thinking I'm stealing their thunder. Yeah, but right. Yeah, so but he stays around for a while, obviously, up until the 90s he's still there. It's sad. I remember seeing him in the early 90s not wrestling, but he would come to the ring and he'd have crutches. He'd have to come on crutches because the guy couldn't walk. And it was sad seeing this guy who was, you know, 7 foot tall, 500 pounds, and he can't even move. And he's even saying, he's like, I'll be back. He's like, I'll be back soon. And then people are going to pay and stuff like that. And everyone's like, wow, okay. And this is in the early 90s. So then he does, like, his last appearance is actually, he gets kind of a fight with Vince McMahon, apparently, from what I've read. And then I've seen in some documentaries. HBO pretty recently, just maybe last year or so, maybe 2 years ago, they did a really good, interesting documentary on him.
Didn't you watch it with your kiddos?
Yes. Well,
is it kiddo appropriate?
Yeah, it's fine. It's nothing. Okay. It's nothing like that. It's they talk about him drinking alcohol, but nothing like that. And then
nothing crazy.
Talked about how, one of the things Andre Giant liked to do in the ring was, if you ever watch a tape where he's sitting on someone, he's also farted on them.
Yeah, I read that. And they said, like, there were like intense 30 second farts.
I said, yeah. They said Hogan said he timed one once in an elevator and it lasted over a minute.
That's insane.
And it was just like disgusting. Like, it would literally just like make you vomit. That's what it was. And he would always do that in a match, where he would go and just like do that all the time. And Jake Roberts was in an interview saying once that Andre Giant was doing that and started laughing and said, "Oh, sorry." And then Jake Roberts looked over and his shoulder was was basically colored.
But then
what are you going to do? Like, it's a 7 foot tall, 500 pound man. Yeah, you're doing that to you. You're not really going to be able to do much. But he continues to wrestle.
He passes away from.
He goes to France. His father dies.
That's what it was. And he decides he's going to stick around for a little longer.
For a little while. Because he's having fun seeing all his old family. So that, because he lived here. He lived in North Carolina, actually.
He had a house, they said, with a tree that grew through it in like 3 stories.
And he had like a giant ranch. And he said the people in the town were so just like, used to him that they didn't like swarm him. Because he would go somewhere and he would stick out. And people would always come over.
Really?
Well, yeah. But he was sad at times because,
they said kids used to point at him and he was upset by that. Look at that.
And a lot of he would tell a lot of his friends, like, I just wish I could live like one day a week just like you. Like, just like, walk around and go to the movies. He always talked about how he heard about how awesome plays were in New York City, like music. He always wanted to go to one. And they're like, "All right, we'll get you tickets. We'll go." He's like, "Isaac, I can't go." He's like, "Where am I going to sit? I'm not going to fit in the seat. If I have to get up, and if I sit in front of people, they're not going to be able to see." He's like, "That's not fair to anybody." He was very conscious of like how he, not necessarily his appearance, but just him being there could like throw things off for other people. So it was sad. And that's why he liked being on that ranch. But he did go home for his father's funeral, and he basically dies in his sleep. He has heart failure.
Yep. By the time he's been gone since the 90s now, early 90s, but
1992,
if you think about it, this transcends wrestling. And obviously, like, he's also on TV. I mean, I remember him specifically from one of my favorite movies of all time, The Princess Bride.
Princess Bride. When that part was Fezzik, right? The giant, basically.
Gentle giant.
Yeah, the guy who wrote the book, I forgot his name, I can't remember right now, it was a huge Andre the Giant fan. And he said when they were making the movie, he's like, "You have to get Andre the Giant for this movie."
Yeah.
And they were like, "Oh, okay." So they got him.
Do you know he was also, He was also in Goonies music video. The Goonies Are Good Enough by Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah. Well, he was, yeah, a lot of the wrestlers were with that, because Cyndi Lauper was very good friends with Captain Lou Albano.
Yeah.
Who played the father in, Girls Want to Have Fun. Rock and Wrestling Connection.
Oh, look at that. That's something new.
Yeah.
So,
but yeah, he was also played Sasquatch in The $6 Million Man.
He did. It was the secret of Bigfoot, part one and part Bigfoot, two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he was in a lot of things. And Billy Crystal talks about him very fondly. Billy Crystal wrote the movie My Giant. It was supposed to be Andre Giant. I was starring the movie with him, that movie, My Giant. Yeah. Instead, Andre Giant passed away. And it had George Murison, the basketball player, filled in instead. I never saw the movie. I remember seeing it advertised, but it was originally written for Andre Giant. They talked about how Andre Giant was like this very kind man.
To talk about The Princess Bride, Cary Elwes, the main guy that in The Princess Bride, recalled later on when he wrote a book about it a few years ago, he said that Andre the Giant got so drunk once, he had like 116 beers, and that he literally just passed out in the lobby of a hotel. And they didn't know what to do, so they just left him there because there's nothing that can move him.
Yeah, they and said they had him before. Yeah, they couldn't. Yeah, they were just wake him up, and
they couldn't wake him up. So they just left him in this lobby, and people are still coming in the middle of the night.
People had walk over him.
Yeah, they had over him. Like, oh, that's right, it's just Andre the Giant. But another time, he also talked about this, during the making of Princess Bride. He said that he got really drunk at one point, and he fell over onto somebody and crushed somebody. Mm. And they said that after that, they actually had a NYPD. I'm not sure this is true, but at least this actor from Princess Bride says that NYPD would send an undercover officer to follow them around whenever they went drinking in New York City, so that way he didn't fall on anyone again. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how true that is, but that's pretty intense. Having said that, let's get into some of those interesting facts about Andre the Giant.
Interesting fact is personal life. He does have a daughter.
Yes.
Her name is Robin Christianstein Romanoff. Basically. Rusamoff, I'm sorry, Romanoff, somebody else.
Yeah.
And she only met her father a few times in her life. She said she always was aware that was her father.
Yeah.
And if you watch the documentaries, you read the books, even when he said, it might be true, but it said Andre, he talked about her all the time, but he just didn't want her to live, be exposed to that type of life.
Well, he left everything he owned to her.
Yeah, he left everything. He said he always wished he had a better.
Even his likeness and stuff. She has. You have to
ask. She has rights. Anything that they do with her, they have to ask her for permission. That's how she makes. Yep. I mean, I'm sure she was. She has her own career having that too. But yeah, he left everything. The ranch, all of his money. He still had. He was still a multimillionaire when he passed away.
Yeah,
because he's still Andre the Giant. But his likeness too. So if they make action figures, if he's in a video game, the documentaries, if they anything like that, they have to go through her. And she allows it, obviously. But she understands it. But it's sad too. Because I'm sure you would like to know more about your father. I'm sure he would like to have more of a relationship with her. But only a handful of times did they ever actually even meet. He would always send, get presents and stuff like that. But you want your parent there.
Crazy. So let's talk about some of his drinking, because there's a lot of interesting
stories. Well, he's basically unofficially crowned the greatest drinker on earth, right?
Yeah.
They're saying at one point he drank, had it somewhere at one time, 109, well, there's more than once, but he drank 156 beers, which is about 470 milliliters or 73 liters of beer.
And if anyone has a chance when you're listening to this later on, Google a picture of Andre the Giant holding a regular 12-ounce can of beer and what it looks like in his hand. It is tiny. I mean, that's why he could down 100 beers. Like, a can was like, it looks like a little kid's toy in his hand.
It was absolutely nothing. They said he once went to a bar. He walked in, ordered 40 vodka tonics as soon as he walked in. And he drank them all within a short amount of time. They're just like, and he wouldn't even know. They wouldn't even, like, a lot of
I mean, he would drink five bottles of wine during dinner every day. Like, people have a glass of wine at dinner. Like, he would have five bottles.
Yeah, he would order it right away, and it wouldn't. And they said a lot of it was to dull the pain, because he was in a lot of pain all the time. And that was a problem too when he got back surgery. At one point, the anesthesiologist came in and they tried to figure out, well, how much can you drink? Is that something we can tell? Like, maybe to feel the to start feeling
anesthesia. They couldn't figure out how much anesthesia to give
him. And they didn't know. So eventually they just kind of equated it with an elephant. That's what they said.
Yeah. And yeah, they asked him, they're like, realistically, how much can you drink? And this actually came up when he was on David Letterman.
And he asked him 2 liters of vodka before he feels warm. And they're like,
Yeah, then David Letterman, that's what he said, like, when he passed out in a hotel, like, lobby. He said he drank, like, 117, you know, beers in one sitting. One sitting, he sat down and drank 117 beers. But, you know, he was capable of doing, like, 127 or 150 once. Like, what? What?
Yeah, he could do it. But he said he was always, like, the nicest guy, too. I know there was this one story that I heard several times, so I'm just going to say it's true because why not? Where these guys were kind of giving him and his friends a hard time and saying all this other stuff about it. And then as they left, they actually threw water or beer on one of Andre Giant's friends. So Andre Giant, they run out to the car and they try speeding away. And all of a sudden they realize that the car's not going anywhere. They look back and Andre Giant actually has picked up the car on the bumper. He's picked it up. And the car's like trying to drive away. And the guys jump out of the car because they're freaked out. And he actually flips the car over onto its hood, onto its roof, and just walks away.
They said he started doing this when he was really young. That was his number one prank, like moving cars.
But that's really, like, think about that. That's his prank. I'm just going to flip your car over.
Yeah, yeah, it's nuts.
You know? And he said the cops came, and the cops were like, what do you want us to do? They would just be like, they all liked Andre. He's the kind of cops would go and have a drink with him. They're like, don't make him mad, and he wouldn't have flipped your car over.
They said that whenever he was out with friends.
It wouldn't happen today, obviously. But.
No. But I mean, whatever he was out with friends, they said oftentimes they're like, oh, let's mess with this person. Like, they would just move. Like, if it was a smaller vehicle, it was even easier for him. He would literally move cars around, like, face the opposite direction of them. Like, that was his go-to prank.
That was his thing.
They said he always lifted it through the front, and then he would, like, in, like, a squat, like, scooch over, like, while twisting the car, and then go get the back and keep on doing it. Like, just lifting cars. Like, that's nuts. He also said, like, his fingers presented, like, unique problems.
He wouldn't be able to use, like, a cell phone today.
There's no way he could use a cell phone today. They said he could never use a conventional rotary phone back then. Like, he needed to use a pencil.
Like a pencil. Yeah, there's no way you wouldn't be able to. People listening to me, I don't even remember some of these people on rotary
phone. They're like, what's a rotary phone? Also, they said that he always was mesmerized by the sound of a piano. But he could never play the piano because they actually measured his one finger would touch 3 keys. That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just if you're so large. That's what it was. I mean, when you're that big, it's just hard to imagine. Like, get not doll furniture, but like little kid toys and try to like use that as an adult and just sort of, they said it was like going to like a preschool and sit in the chairs. That's what it was like for him.
Yeah.
Other than his ranch, he had like custom built everything. But.
Yeah, and that's kind of the talking about custom built things. One of the things, he loved the QVC, right?
Yeah, he could order stuff. Yeah,
he could order. Yeah, that came out in like mid '80s, and he was like, first of all, he did not like being in public too much because he felt like people stared at him a lot. Again, regardless of how much wealth he had and how known he was, so he would just sit and like, you know, shop on the home shopping network. They said he loved it. He would just. All the time would just buy things. He would sit there and watch TV, flip the channels, and order things. Oh, this is pre-internet, obviously. You know, and I think just we kind of glossed over this idea of drinking, but in a grand scheme of things, like he wasn't a drunk. He drank a lot because his body like really wasn't affected that much by it.
That's what it was. The reason he drank so much was it would take 116 beers to maybe start to dull some of the pain. But really, he was a sociable person. I'm not condoning the drinking that much, obviously. And it was just, he could. I mean, when you're that size, it's not the same. Like, that would kill most people.
Yeah.
Or you just wouldn't be able to do it. You'd pass out. And he would just keep on going. And they said no one could ever keep up with him. People would try. They had, like, competitions and stuff. And there's like no way, like no one could even come close. They said Ric Flair used to always try to beat him and obviously never came close. There was always a rumor too that he had an extra row of teeth. That it's not true, obviously, but I remember in the interview with Ric Flair, he's always trying to look up and see if he had like an extra row of teeth and stuff
that.
That's
funny.
Because all these, that he had like a heart on both sides. That's another reason why he was so big. I'm like, what? But these are just the rumors that, you know, came out at the time about him.
Any other fascinating facts you got about him?
Well, I think one that he was the first ever inductee into the Hall of Fame, the WWE Hall of Fame, right? And there wasn't even a banquet or anything like that, but 1994, he becomes the first person. Some of the other stuff. He didn't like wrestling wrestlers that had baby oil on.
He hated that one. I read that.
He hated that. So if they had it, he would just beat them. He would just slap them. If Andre the Giant like slapped you on the stomach or on the chest, it could stop your heart. So a lot of wrestlers would like wear it, but then if they wrestled Andre the Giant, they'd be like, I'm not going to wear it anymore because it's just not worth it. No. So imagine that, like if he smacked you.
There's one guy now that is like Big Show. Is that his name?
Yeah, Big Show. Yeah.
They said like Paul Wright. Similar to him, but not.
Well, he was similar to him. He did have, there's still debate if Andre the Giant was actually as tall as they say he was. He was not the tallest wrestler ever. There's been taller wrestlers. Giant Gonzalez was bigger, but he was never really like a name. But the Big Show was actually, when he first came out, he was actually billed as Andre the Giant's son. And he's not. He wasn't. That's what he was billed as originally. But he actually had the same thing, but he had the
surgery done, right?
He had the surgery done in the early 90s, I guess, once he was diagnosed with it. So that he's kind of like stopped growing. He didn't get the gigantic features as much as Andre the Giant did.
Yeah.
And his pictures of Andre like having like, you know, holding like four or five girls, four or five wrestlers at the same time.
Yeah.
It's just massive.
That is nuts. Well, I mean, that's all I got about Andre the Giant. Yeah, I'm glad we got to do this time. I feel like
one of our longest ones, but yeah, I think it was an interesting one.
And I feel like, you know, we needed to do this for Tom.
I like all the stuff that we do. Don't get me wrong. I just thought this one was like a little pop culture, a little bit of the Sport of Kings into this a little bit, you know?
Yeah, this is good stuff. Good stuff.
We're not going to do any more wrestlers. Don't worry. It's not gonna, this is not
never
be say a
never.
Wrestling podcast.
Never say never. Well, know what I want to do? Like, I want to do something about like James Bond, like the history behind the movie, James Bond. Ian Fleming was technically a spy during World War II, and then that's how he got his inspiration for James Bond. So that could be very historical, but still
historical backgrounds of the historical figures and stuff like that.
Yeah, it could be fun stuff.
Yeah, we've talked about it. We'll figure it out.
We'll make it work. Yeah, that's the beauty of it. We don't have a boss. We are our own boss.
Yes, we just kind of like, hey, let's do Andre the Giant. Okay.
Woo, let's do it. But those of you that did enjoy it.
How could you not enjoy Andre the Giant?
Yeah, I know, right? Either way, I want to thank everyone for tuning in once more to our podcast. It is greatly appreciated.
Yes,
and if you guys ever need anything, you could always find us on History Teachers Talking Podcast .com. So I guess that's it for this week. So thank you very much again, and we'll see you guys next week.
Stay safe, everybody.
I hope everyone enjoyed our podcast, and if you would like to email us, you can do so at historyteacherspodcast@gmail.com.